This Hawaiian mini vacation is brought to your radio by Maui Bob's Office Cleaning. So what does professional office cleaning have to do with relaxing in a tropical paradise? Frankly, nothing. But Maui Bob and the crew want to remind you to be sure to take the time for what's important in this workaday world. Family, friends, and yes, even yourself. And if their professional office cleaning services can help you make that time, give them a call at 221-5868. This Hawaiian mini vacation was brought to your radio by Maui Bob's Office Cleaning, 221-5868.
From the historic campus of Hillsdale College in Hillsdale, Michigan, where the good, the true, and the beautiful are taught, nurtured, and honored, this is the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour, bringing the activity and education of the college to listeners across the country.
And what you're talking about here is just a massive, like almost incalculable level of funding interference in the way we think and talk about every single issue.
This is your host, Scott Bertram. Welcome to the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour, part of the Hillsdale College Podcast Network. And that was Molly Hemingway, Senior Journalism Fellow here at Hillsdale College, Editor-in-Chief at The Federalist, and also contributor at Fox News Channel. We talk in depth with Molly today about challenges in our election system and also problems inside the media. Molly, thanks for joining us.
Great to be here with you.
Talk a little about elections, a little about media. You recently gave some testimony in front of the House Administration Committee on U.S. elections, your research, your work in the past. What was your message that you wanted to get across to these members of the House?
Well, the purpose of the committee hearing was to discuss Zuckerbucks, which is the colloquial term for the private takeover of government election offices to run get-out-the-vote efforts in a partisan fashion. And it's named that because of Mark Zuckerberg funding that type of operation in the 2020 election, but it's ongoing in all sorts of ways. And so that was the purpose of the committee hearing. And I was talking about that because my book Rigged goes into that topic quite a bit. But I also wanted people to think through all the ways that our elections are under attack. And it's not just through the private takeover of government election offices. It's also through the censorship industrial complex, which suppresses news information that does not match with like approved narratives and elevates false news information that does match with approved narratives. And we have a really troubled press right now that is not doing a good job of accurately informing voters. And we also have an amazing amount of lawfare directed against candidates. You know, one of the prime ways that the United States views other elections as not having integrity is if you don't allow people to vote for the candidate of their choice, you remove people from the ballot, or you gin up prosecutions in order to bankrupt or imprison your political opponents. And we've got all that going on right now.
Zuckerbucks and the investment of those funds into areas for voter sign-up and voter registration, is that going to play as big of a role in 2024 now that we are less than a year out as it looked like it did in 2020?
I think it'll still play a very big role. The amount of funding that's going into it has actually increased, and some of that is being done through the federal government. President Biden, in March of 2017, signed an executive order basically requiring each federal agency to come up with a plan for how to get involved in elections in a way that had previously been viewed as incredibly inappropriate. So now if you provide welfare benefits to a certain segment of the population, you're supposed to also get involved in getting those people to the polls. That was always viewed as inappropriate because the people giving you the benefit are telling you, in essence, to keep voting for them. And now we've got that happening at agencies all over the country. And it's something that people need to be aware of.
Part of what you talked about was the lack of trust in elections, the deterioration of elections due to lengthy election seasons. And we've talked about this previously. We used to have an election day. Everyone votes using the same information. Now we have seasons, sometimes months, sometimes 6 weeks, 7 weeks in advance, where people get a chance to go cast a ballot. What is the effect of the fact that we are no longer voting using the same information? We are voting at different times of this election season.
Right. So there's something to the civic health of everybody going through a campaign together, getting the same set of information together, making a decision based on the facts that you get in the campaign, and then having the result revealed fairly quickly so that you then have to accept the result and move on. We have expanded this into such a lengthy period of time that people are voting on different sets of facts. You can frequently see people voting before you've even had a debate, whether it's a gubernatorial debate or a presidential debate, which is just, you know, it's just not where, it's not the best possible situation if you want to have civic health and shared set of facts.
And it can't be healthy that now so much of turnout and so much of balloting is about the ballot itself and not the candidate, meaning you're casting a vote for a party or this avatar rather than voting on the issues or what happened in a debate or what's happening leading up to an election day.
Well, or even just being a responsible, informed voter. I'm so old that I remember when people would talk about the need to have informed voters. People were worried about people coming to the polls without really understanding the significance of what they were voting for. Well, goodness, like now you have people who are voting who might not even really know that they're voting or that they are, that there's an election or who the candidates are. So much of the process is being handled by third parties who register the other person to vote, request an application for the ballot for that person on their behalf, or ballots just come to that person without them even knowing there's something going on. And then you have people who come in and, you know, purport to help someone fill out a ballot. Let's say it's in a nursing home or in some other place where the level of information that they're getting might not match with what we would want. And so you have really high levels of problems with that. That used to be a bipartisan concern, and now everyone's just trying to ballot harvest as much as possible.
Molly Hemingway with us here on the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour. You had many states make these changes back in 2020 and say, well, due to COVID, we're going to change the way we do X or Y when it comes to the election. How many of those states are still using COVID era election rules and regulations now that COVID no longer is the issue it was?
Right. So for decades, you had certain people in the Democrat Party who were looking to radically change the way we vote, and they had never been able to find a way to make that happen. Because COVID happened, it was viewed as an extreme measure. So some of these really radical changes, for instance, mass mailing out of ballots to addresses, regardless of whether someone had voted in years or even maybe was alive or not, you know, that type of change was instituted. And by and large, most of those changes have actually remained. There are states where they have moved to increase the integrity of voting. And, you know, that could be anywhere from Georgia to Wisconsin. You then have, even after some of those states made efforts to improve the situation in terms of the integrity of their elections, sometimes you had governors veto those efforts, but not as many states improved things as there should have been, and particularly in the states where the problems exist. You've seen a lot of money pouring into swing states that have heavily Democratic populations in city centers, and those are the states that are least likely to have had changes.
You testified in front of the House Administration Committee on this. What is the role of Congress with these rules and regulations, and so many are determined and put in place by the states who control the elections inside that state?
Well, and that's, it should be that states control how elections are done because the Constitution leaves it to state legislatures to set the rules for a given election. By the way, that was one of the problems in 2020, was that frequently entities other than state legislatures made very dramatic changes to the laws in a non-constitutional fashion. But there's still a role for Congress to play, and there has been legislation, including the banning of private takeover of government election offices. And so there's a healthy debate about what to do there. But the House Administration Committee in particular actually has some oversight role because they will be, you know, they're the people who seat the members of Congress. And so they've been interested and doing much more oversight in that area than we saw that committee do in previous years.
Talking with Molly Hemingway here on the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour. She's a senior journalism fellow at Hillsdale, editor-in-chief of The Federalist, and also a Fox News contributor. You mentioned the phrase, the censorship industrial complex, a little earlier on. And I think some of this may have been new since the last time we even talked. Your personal experience and what you now know about how some of your work and how some of the research was suppressed censored by various social media entities. What's your experience with that?
Well, I have a couple things there. The House Judiciary and Weaponization Committee did reveal a list of Americans who had been censored by the government or who the government had worked with tech companies to censor, and I was on that list, much to my surprise. And then separately and much more importantly, the Federalist is suing the U.S. government, the State Department, for its role in the censorship industrial complex. We are doing that with the state of Texas, along with the Daily Wire, and we are suing them for their violation of our First Amendment rights for funding, marketing, generally supporting an ongoing censorship regime that involves literally hundreds, if not thousands, of different entities, both for-profit groups, NGOs, academic institutions, all working to suppress the distribution of news and information that counters their preferred narrative.
Molly, hold on. We'll pause right there. We'll come back and chat more with Molly Hemingway, Senior Journalism Fellow at Hillsdale College. I'm Scott Bertram. This is the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
Hi, this is Judy Maxwell. Life can happen in an instant. Sometimes you plan for it, like retirement or taking care of your family. Sometimes it's a surprise, like a winter storm with home or property damage. Sometimes it may be an unexpected accident or illness or even a premature death. Whatever life throws at you, you'll wish you had gotten the right insurance when you had the chance. That's where Maxwell Insurance can help. For more than a quarter century, we've been serving the North State because it's our home, too. Give us a call at 221-0441 to let us help you review your policies and prepare you for whatever your future holds. Maxwell Insurance, 1378 Hilltop Drive, 221-0441.
Welcome to the Queen of Dragons Dispensary, your ultimate destination for top-notch cannabis experiences. Conveniently located at 5044 Shasta Dam Boulevard, Shasta Lake, our locally owned and operated dispensary takes pride in providing you with the best in price, value, and safety. Rest easy knowing that all of our products are rigorously tested for your peace of mind. We champion medical freedom, empowering you to choose what's right for you. Unbelievable value for unbeatable quality. For exclusive deals and exciting updates, don't forget to follow us on Twitter at the Queen Dragons or visit www.queenofdragons.com. The Queen of Dragons Dispensary, where the fire of quality meets the freedom of choice. Backed by popular demand, fresh and local flower powered by Pinnacle, Shasta County's premier local cultivator. Package fresh and daily with a wide variety and best prices and deals in town. And they can package larger sizes and quantities on site. Available only at the Queen of Dragons Dispensary. Winter hours are Monday through Sunday, 9 a.m. to 7 p.m. and they deliver. 530-276-9771.
This is Ted Leidy with Northern Firearms Instruction. Obtaining a California concealed weapons license will allow the licensed individual to transport a listed handgun in their vehicle or on their person in public. For application instructions, training, and other information, contact NFI at 530-999-1822 or visit us online at usgunpro.com. This is Ted Leidy, and remember, it's our right and our responsibility.
At Stifel Nicolaus, I am committed to offering investors personalized investment guidance. Stifel has a full-service organization with departments staffed with professionals that specialize in a wide range of investment opportunities. We strive to give each account, regardless of size, careful individual attention. This is Susan Eastman, financial advisor, Stifel Nicolaus. Let's talk today about a personalized plan. Give me a call at 530-244-7199. Again, 530-244-7199.
Hi, this is Dr. Trudy Pratt. My chiropractic and nutrition practice in downtown Reading has been helping people feel better for over 20 years. We pride ourselves in really listening to our patients and then tailoring a program of nutrition, chiropractic care, massage, and exercise that's just right for you. The results can be dramatic. Call 244-7873. That's 244-7873. Thank you.
Here at KCNR Radio, we are fortunate to have two well-informed citizens. Hi, I'm Nick Gardner.
And I'm Doug Janke, and we'll give you the inside scoop of news affecting you.
Tune in to Poke the Hornet's Nest Sundays here, 8 o'clock.
KCNR1460.com, 96.5 FM, and on your AM dial, 1460.
We're back on the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour. I'm Scott Bertram. We've been talking with Molly Hemingway, Senior Journalism Fellow at Hillsdale College, Editor-in-Chief at The Federalist, and contributor at Fox News Channel. Molly, a couple of weeks ago we saw emails obtained by Congressman Jim Jordan that show White House officials pressuring Amazon to curb the distribution of books that they thought were discouraging Americans from getting the COVID vaccine. These are actual emails between government officials and private company and Amazon where the government is saying, don't put this in front of people.
Yeah, it's been a couple of years of horrifying releases of information about different federal employees or agencies working to censor. And it is sometimes shocking to just see them being so open and honest about how they're trying to limit the distribution of American speech, which is a violation of our First Amendment rights. And yet it's also true that it's so much bigger than that. There are systems that they are developing and financing and marketing and encouraging big tech platforms to use that even use like AI to come up with speech patterns that they deem inappropriate, or they rule them as disinformation or misinformation. And then they use it to suppress like whole broad swaths of speech, whether it's on foreign policy or COVID policy or, you know, what your thoughts are on radical gender ideology, pretty much all the, and I just want to make up the point too. These are all issues that we vote on. And so this is just a level of interference in our elections that is unfathomable. You remember during the Russia collusion hoax, the claim was made that Russia had destroyed our election integrity because they'd spent $100,000 in Facebook ads,
right,
some of which went for Hillary Clinton and some of which went for Donald Trump. And what you're talking about here is just a massive, like almost incalculable level of funding interference in the way we think and talk about every single issue. And it is an existential crisis for the country. And I'm starting to sense that people care much more about it. I think they're starting to become aware of how many agencies are involved. It's State Department, it's Department of Homeland Security. It's also really a lot of military agencies that are putting a lot of time and effort into controlling speech.
Molly Hemingway with us, Senior Journalism Fellow at Hillsdale, Editor-in-Chief of The Federalist and Fox News contributor. I want to turn our attention to the media, never a lack of stories to discuss. I'm interested somewhat in the response to the special counsel report on President Biden. He's a well-meaning, forgetful old man, as the report indicated. And we saw a story, I believe it was in Politico a few days later, saying, man, some White House reporters noticed this stuff and they weren't sure whether or not they should tell the American public these things that they noticed about the president. Maybe we should have acted a little more quickly. Do you think there's any chance that coverage of the president will change in any meaningful way in the wake of that report?
I am not optimistic that we will see much improved coverage, although you did detect a slight change. But the context, again, is during the previous administration, you had, I think, hundreds, if not thousands, of stories about how clearly Donald Trump was unwell and he needed that people needed to use the 25th Amendment to go after him. You have with this special counsel report that was accepted by a member of Joe Biden's cabinet, Merrick Garland. So this was accepted by him. A claim that he would be found by a jury to be basically unfit to stand trial. And Merrick Garland accepted this. Has anyone even asked Merrick Garland if he's organizing a 25th Amendment type removal from office? So you have hysteria on the one side and just almost like, you know, jackals crazed every time they encounter any member of the press team or the president himself during the Trump administration. And then just a general level of politeness that is unwarranted, I think, for the current administration. It's just such a dramatic swing. It's ridiculous. So even if they're a little bit better, that's not what's needed. They need to be far, far, far better.
I thought it was odd in some of the reporting after the fact, and many in these news analysis pieces, which are, of course, just opinion pieces put on the news section, put inside the news sections, in which there was a explanation that, well, how can special counsel her
You can't make a diagnosis. This is not the way you make a diagnosis of someone's mental capabilities. But the report was not a diagnosis. The report was a reflection of the questions that were asked, the answers that were given, and how he thought a jury of regular Americans would react to seeing President Biden on trial. There was no sort of medical diagnosis inside these pages.
Yes and no. I actually think there's something to be said for how inappropriate it is that we have these special counsels that get to decide for everybody how things are going to go. We all see President Biden is not mentally well. That's not news to anyone. So nobody's really going to be upset at seeing Robert Hur say it. On the other hand, it's not really his place to talk this way. Even the real reason why a Democrat jury in Washington, D.C. would never convict Joe Biden is not because just that they see that he's mentally frail. It's that Democrat juries in D.C. do not convict Democrats of crimes. So it kind of even gets out of it gets out ahead of that issue, which is a really important issue, how we practice rule of law. The Mueller investigation into Donald Trump was absolutely asinine, with 18 months of investigation where at the beginning they knew there was no Russia collusion. And yet they then investigated for 18 months obstruction of justice because you had Trump complaining about the allegation that he was secretly a Russian spy who had colluded with Russia to steal the election. But even like you go back to the Hillary Clinton situation where James Comey comes in, it is clear that she broke the law. He says that himself. And then he says no reasonable jury would convict her of this. It's like, that's not your place, buddy. You know, it's just not a good system for dealing with the situations that we have.
Molly, news recently about the radio conglomerate Audacy, and they declared bankruptcy. And Soros Fund Management, yes, that Soros, has come in to buy a big portion of the debt. They're not the largest owner of Audacy. On the other hand, you have a situation like Sinclair in the TV world. Sinclair owns hundreds of TV stations across the country. Democrats and the media are always looking at them, targeting them, looking for right-wing, Republican, conservative talking points on stations across the country. Now that George Soros is the majority holder in Audacy, I just don't think we're going to see the same level of scrutiny over radio stations in markets all across the country that now fall underneath the Soros Fund Management umbrella.
I do not think you will see people complaining that this means that all of these radio stations and programs that fall under this are in question because they're owned by Soros. But I think it just also shows how seriously the left takes the media. They understand that in order to achieve what they want to achieve, it's important to control a lot of news organizations, and they have invested in it. So rather than be upset about George Soros investing in, or the Soros family, Soros people investing in this media entity, I think people should think about what they're doing to support other media entities. Why not? You know, there's a lot of just like leaving the field to all of these left-wing outlets. I hear people all the time make fun of the Washington Post or the Atlantic for losing tens or even $100 million in a given year. And you can make fun of them for that. But on the other hand, they have owners, whether it's Jeff Bezos or Lorraine Powell Jobs, who know that by owning these media entities, they can control elections and they can control what people think about all sorts of issues. They get to set narratives. They get to define issues. They get to push, in many cases, extremely radical viewpoints. And I'm not recommending anyone do that, but that shows the power of the media. Mm-hmm. And rather than complain, people should invest in media.
Molly Hemingway is Senior Journalism Fellow at Hillsdale College, Editor-in-Chief at The Federalist, and Fox News contributor. Molly, thanks so much for joining us here on the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
Thank you.
Up next, we talk with Brandon Weikert. His recent book, The Shadow War, Iran's Quest for Supremacy. We'll discuss next. I'm Scott Bertram. This is the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
Everybody has been dealing with the availability of homeowners insurance in Northern California. Companies not writing your home insurance anymore are leaving the state altogether. Siskiyou Insurance has hired a specialist specifically for dealing with a homeowners crisis here in Shasta County. He specializes in what the market is doing, coverages, and which companies may be able to help. Call Brian Dews at Siskiyou Insurance Services for your home or auto consultation. Siskiyou Insurance Services, 530-224-2345 or 1-800-773-2345.
Hi, friends, RC here, bringing you this month's Cigar of the Humidor, the Diesel Vintage. A smooth burn, a perfect draw, and flavor for days. This is what an expertly crafted Parejo from the farms of A.J. Fernandez offers us. The Diesel Vintage is everything we seek in a fine and exceptional cigar experience. Get yours today at Tobacco & Brew, Redding, California.
Tired of that long drive home from Sacramento? Try Redding Regional Airport, where you can travel the world with one connection on United, Alaska, or Avelo Airlines. RDD is located just down the road. Skip the drive, enjoy quick check-ins, and travel with ease and convenience. Getting where you want to go is easier than ever with non-stop flights to San Francisco, Seattle, Los Angeles, and Burbank. Enjoy that vacation you've been dreaming about. Fly with ease and convenience from Redding Regional Airport.
I'm celebrating local heroes. Tune in the second Thursday each month at 6.05 p.m. right after the news for Heroes of the North State on North State Now. I'm Michelle Slade. During North State Now, we will speak with your neighbors, friends, family, and community members who give back, not to be recognized, but because it's the right thing to do. During these conversations, we will learn what truly makes our community and the people in it. Join me the second Thursday of each month at 6.05 p.m. right after the news for Heroes of the North State on North State Now.
Hi, this is Chuck Kenny with Shasta Gas Propane. It's been a while since I've cut a new radio spot, but I feel I need to issue a warning about energy prices during this fall winter. Just as Obama said after he was elected, elections have consequences. This winter, our country will suffer some of the consequences of the last election. I'm not a politician, but I am a businessman, and many of the decisions of this current administration will drastically affect energy prices this winter and going forward. Already we are experiencing record high propane costs and prices. Remember, our motto at Shasta Gas Propane is, our customers are warm friends. We will treat you like friends this winter and do our best to help you through this high price winter. Give us a call at 365-3793. That's 365-3793.
KCNR invites you to join us the second Friday of the month starting at 8 a.m. for the Gorman Law Hour featuring local attorney Patrick Gorman, a legal expert when it comes to injured workers, compensation claims, and employee claims. So, if you have a legal question or just wonder whether or not you have a legal issue or problem, talk to Patrick Gorman, attorney at law, during the Gorman Law Hour starting at 8 a.m. the second Friday of the month on KCNR.
Hi, this is Elle. Join me and my good friend and co-host Ron Lim and Lenny Matthews for our show, Ask Elle, right here on KCNR 96.5 FM and 1460 AM. Every Tuesday night at 6 p.m., we'll be exploring powerful topics on how to have a successful and satisfying relationship. See you here on Tuesday night at 6 p.m., brought to you by KNS Staffing Solutions.
530-605-4517.
Welcome back to the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour. I'm Scott Bertrand. Be sure to check out the Hillsdale College Podcast Network at podcast.hillsdale.edu for older episodes of this show and other Hillsdale College audio. We're joined now by Brandon J. Weicker. He's the author of a couple of books, including Winning Space and Biohacked. His most recent is The Shadow War, Iran's Quest for Supremacy. You can find him on X, formerly Twitter, at WeTheBrandon. Brandon, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me again. It's such a pleasure to be here, and Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you. The Shadow War does a lot to predict what we have seen in the last few months in Israel and the terror attack by Hamas. What, if anything, were you surprised about by what happened back in October of last year? And what do you believe was Iran's role in executing it?
Yeah, that's an excellent question. So I think the surprise for me was how unawares the Mossad was caught. They had apparently been receiving some intelligence that the Hamas was up to something, but similar to 9/11 here in the United States, where the Bush administration was receiving warning indicators from the intelligence networks, it was sort of a failure to believe and they just were not, they did not act quick enough to respond to the growing threat that was Hamas. The question of what was Iran's role, I think, is a very important one. We don't want to acknowledge it. The Biden administration doesn't want to acknowledge the fact that Iran's hidden hand is felt in all of these moves going on in the Middle East, particularly the October 7th attack. The Iranians are operating on a belief that they have to push the Americans out of the region. And the only way they can do that is by attacking American allies in the region, like Israel, like Saudi Arabia. And they want to prevent those American allies, Israel and Saudi Arabia and the Sunni Arab states as well, from aligning with each other in a formal alliance to contain Iran.
I've asked this question to a few people and gotten disparate answers. So I ask you, do you believe that at this point that Iran is seeking a wider regional war? Are they looking for an excuse to enter and become more involved in this conflict?
I think that the long-term plan, I should say that the plan for this year, 2024, is to push as far as they can. And I think they're waiting to see how the results of the American presidential election is going to be. If Donald Trump, who seems to be the likely nominee to the Republican Party, if Trump is the winner of the 2024 election, I do not believe the Iranians will risk a war because they know that Trump will strike back with ferocity. If, however, Biden is able to get reelected, I think that the Iranians will continue escalating. They need to create chaos. And by the way, they are being backed very, very seriously by China and to a lesser extent Russia. But the Iranians need to basically create chaos in the region that will hopefully push the Americans out and allow for them to ascend the ladder as being the dominant power in the region. And that is part of their imperial project. And I think that they are seeking a wider war. They may not be seeking it at this specific moment because they're on their back foot right now with Israel going on the offensive. But I think, yes, if they can, they are seeking to expand the war the way they want to do it, basically using unconventional tactics, using those terrorist networks and the threat of, you know, dirty bomb attacks and whatnot and terrorism in general as the means to do it.
Talking with Brandon J. Weichert. His book is The Shadow War, Iran's Quest for Supremacy. Another group we've heard about often in these past 2 months or so, the Houthi rebels, and they're discussed in the book, The Shadow War. Who are these Houthi rebels and why and how is Iran engaged with them?
Well, the Houthis are another example of the unbelievable failure that was the Obama-Biden foreign policy for the Middle East. The Houthis are basically a Shiite Muslim tribe in Yemen, and they were sort of, they rose to prominence after the Obama administration dropped the ball in Yemen in 2009 and 10. Basically, Obama inadvertently helped to overthrow the monarchy in Yemen, which then created all this chaos in which the Shiite Houthis stepped up, backed by their fellow Shiites in Iran, and basically became a huge problem, not just for Yemen and Saudi Arabia next door, but for the world, because the Houthis, under the direction of Iran, are using increasingly sophisticated technology like advanced missiles and drones to harass and target oil production facilities like the Abqaiq refinery in eastern Saudi Arabia. They're using these weapons to target and go after, as we've seen now in the Red Sea, critical shipping. All of this is designed as part of Iran's shadow war in the economic realm. It's designed to basically make the economies of the West really slow down and be damaged because the shipping lanes, for instance, are having to be shifted away from the Red Sea and the Suez Canal and around the Horn of Africa, which causes the cost of everything to go up. And in an economic situation such as we have today, that's going to spell disaster, they think, in Iran. They think it will spell disaster for the Americans and the West. And so that's part, the Houthis are part of this sort of unconventional, all measures short of direct war policy that the Iranians have spent the last 40 years crafting.
Brandon J. Weichert with us. At the end of the book, The Shadow War, you discuss some solutions to these problems, outline what could be done largely following, building upon the Trump administration's Abraham Accords. Are your recommendations still operational in the wake of what we've seen the past 3-4 months?
We're certainly reaching a point where they won't be, but I still think in the next 8 months they can be applied. The key thing here is bringing Israeli and Saudi power to bear against Iran, not necessarily in direct war, but to basically take that strategy of containment and deterrence that we used in the Cold War against the Soviet Union and applying it at a regional level against Iran. And I think that the Trump administration was ahead of its time with that policy. I think it is still very much applicable. There might need to be some adjustments made. We might need to use some degree of force to sort of put Iran back in its box in the immediate term. But I think in the medium to long term, I absolutely think the policy of Abraham Accords plus maximum pressure on Iran is the way to go. It's the only way to avoid another Iraq war disaster. And it's the only way to avoid basically giving the region over to Iran and their Chinese and Russian partners. And we do not want that to happen because of the oil and natural gas interests there, and the fact that so much of the world's shipping passes through that part of the world. We do not want to hand that region over to anti-American powers.
One more question. You mentioned Saudi Arabia, and inside the shadow war, you call Saudi Arabia an imperfect ally.
Yeah.
Why should we think of them that way? And can Saudi Arabia be useful as a counterweight to what Iran is in the region?
Well, they're an imperfect ally because you look at the fact that so many of their people are pro-Islamist. You look at the fact that, you know, Al-Qaeda really is a byproduct of Saudi domestic politics from the 80s and 90s. You look at the fact also that so much of the global Islamist movement is funded by members of the Saudi royal family. They're a problem, and also the human rights, I mean, they're a problem for us. But ultimately, they are very useful when we're talking about not only countering terrorism, particularly after 2003. The Saudis have become very effective in using their counterintelligence and their counterterrorism capabilities to go after terrorists that we are also threatened by, but also because they are so under Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman, at least his leadership, they are so dedicated to containing Iran. So that should indicate to us that even though publicly they're distancing from Israel, the Saudis do not want to see an Iran that is ascendant or nuclear armed.
Brandon J. Weikert, his book, The Shadow War, Iran's Quest for Supremacy, is available now. You can find him on X, formerly Twitter, at WeTheBrandon. Brandon, thanks so much for joining us here on the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
Thank you so much for having me.
Up next, we talk with Dr. Benedict Whalen from Hillsdale's English Department about Milton's Paradise Lost. I'm Scott Bertram. This is the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
Cornerstone Community Bank, you're more than just a customer. You're our friends, neighbors, the local businesses where we shop, and the restaurants where we dine. Your success strengthens our community. Come meet our amazing teams in Reading, Red Bluff, and our newest location in Anderson, and find out why we are more than banking. Cornerstone Community Bank, member FDIC and Equal Housing Lender.
But join me for the first Thursday of every month at 6 p.m. for my show, North State Now. In this one-hour show, we cover what's happening in the music scene, theater, food, and arts. We get in-depth interviews with local business owners, musicians, actors, and authors. Listen in, tune in, call in, participate. Win tickets to concerts and theater productions. It's a lot of fun, and believe me, it keeps us going. Join me, your host, Linda Bott, for North State Now, the first Thursday, right here on KCNR 96.5 FM and 1460 AM. Also streaming at KCNR1460.com.
Join Aaron Ryan and Bill Cundiff for We the People Radio every Sunday from noon until 2. Our expert guests will give you the whole story rather than a bunch of sound bites. Our commercial-free archives are always available at wethepeopleradio.us.
Sponsored in part by Pape Machinery, located at 3119 Twinview Boulevard, for all your local John Deere ag and turf products. Join us every Sunday from noon until 2, wethepeopleradio.us.
What shall we do about them?
This is Carl Bott and Ted Leidy. We want to invite you to our new show, Man Up, the fourth Thursday of each month, right here on KCNR 96.5 FM and 1460 AM.
Man Up, 6 to 7 p.m., where we explore the lost art of being a man.
Spirits, cigars, and hit the ground running when you get up in the morning. That's what Man Up's going to be about.
Oh, don't forget motorcycles, guns, and hard work every day.
And those things that men talk about when women aren't around.
That's right. Even cooking sometimes.
Even cooking sometimes. People, places, and things.
Serving your family, your community, and your country.
Man Up. Fourth Thursday of each month from 6 to 7 p.m. right here on Free Fire Radio.
Welcome back to the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour. I'm Scott Bertram. You can get an email every time there's a new episode of the program. Go to radiohour.hillsdale.edu, click on subscribe, and enter your email address. We're joined by Dr. Ben Whalen, Associate Professor of English at Hillsdale College. Dr. Whalen, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me, Scott.
Discussing John Milton today and his great work, Paradise Lost. We start with the author himself. Who was John Milton? What made him stand out among the writers of his time?
So Milton comes at the end of the period we call the English Renaissance. He lives through the middle of the 17th century. He is a towering figure in English literature. His Paradise Lost is perhaps the great epic in English literature. Certainly in this period, it stands right there with Edmund Spenser's The Faerie Queen as the two great English epics. He's a very, very interesting and complex thinker. Milton wrote poetry. He also wrote many, many works of prose on theology, on politics. His work, The Areopagitica, advocates for freedom of religion and for freedom of speech. So he's an involved thinker. He's a true Renaissance man, involved in these different fields. In his own political conviction, in general, I can say that he was a Republican. So if we think of England in the 17th century, we can think of the Stuart monarchy, and we have James I and Charles I. And then, of course, the terrible English civil wars in the 1640s, the Republican party, the parliamentarian party, beheads Charles I, and they have this interregnum government during the 50s under Cromwell, and then that falls apart after Cromwell's death, and they invite the Stuarts back, and so you have Charles II and James II. Well, Milton was deeply invested in the Republican parliamentarian interregnum government, and in fact served as the Secretary of Foreign Tongues, so really sort of like a Secretary of State figure for England at the time. And Milton cared about that very much. So he did not like the English monarchy and loved this different Republican government that they formed.
The Paradise Lost contains, as you've mentioned, the biblical story of the fall of man, Adam and Eve. It's a story that people know.
Yeah.
What is the value that Milton adds here to make it a classic of literature?
The poem it's a massive work. It spans 12 books in its final form. The account from Genesis, it's very short. So, in one sense, you could look at Paradise Lost as the extended meditations of a deeply learned poet, on what sin is and how it came about. How could perfect and unfallen human beings enjoying paradise come in fact to to be so selfish, to turn away from the simple rules that God has given them. So it's an extended meditation in part on that. The I'll say that Milton also in the very prologue to the whole poem, he says that here I am going to, the quote is, pursue things unattempted yet in prose or rhyme, which actually could be alarming. I mean, it's interesting. It's bold, but it's also can alarm some Christians, because when he says, pursuing things unattempted in prose or rhyme, well, that would include sacred scripture. So the question does become, it's a legitimate question, Milton, what do you have to add mm-hmm. to this account? What for instance, did Abraham leave out? what's lacking? Why do we need this poem?
We have our main characters, Adam, Eve,
yeah.
and Satan. I think we've got to talk about Satan. What should we make of the character of Satan in Paradise Lost? Some argue he's the true hero. He's the most interesting character in Paradise Lost. But he's also clearly presented as the origin of all evil. Is that dichotomy yeah. in some ways key to what makes Paradise Lost work?
Yes, it is. The poem opens, Milton, of course, is a great student of the classics, and so he's read his Homer and his Virgil, and so the poem opens in media res, in the middle of things, which is convention for the beginnings of epics. And the beginning of things in this poem is with Satan already having fallen, but the humans not.
Mm-hmm.
And so the poem, the first character we meet in Paradise Lost, other than the narrator, is Satan, who's rolling around in the fires of hell and coming to his senses after his great defeat in heaven. And then Satan speaks, and he's got this tremendous energy and courage and vitality and a certain sort of charisma and character that's quite powerful. And so it's a startling beginning for readers who might expect a sort of two-dimensional caricature Satan. I'm going to bring man to his downfall. That's not what we get at all. We get a passionate, suffering, thoughtful Satan. And that is, Milton invites this sort of problem that we have where later thinkers and readers of the poem, especially in the Romantic period, the English Romantics commonly saw Satan as the hero of the mm-hmm. poem. They thought his sort of bold, aspiring courage against the implacable, you know, calm perfection of God is actually admirable.
Mm-hmm. What do we learn from here about disobedience, revolt, those themes that are found throughout Paradise Lost?
It's very difficult. The disobedience comes about in part through selfishness. You can see the turn inward. Mm-hmm. We, of course, Eve eats the fruit first, and Milton gives us her long temptation of Satan with Eve, and it's a temptation that you can become like God, and in fact, particularly that you can become superior to Adam. And so we see her in soliloquy and meditation turn within and this selfish turn. And then with Adam, when Eve brings him the fruit, you can see it's a classic sort of aspect of sin that he puts a secondary good above the primary good. So he loves Eve mm-hmm. and he in his devotion to her puts her above obedience to God. And so then he also eats. Then after that, it's also, as one would expect, Adam and Eve, after they eat the fruit, are initially happy. They're in fact elevated, and Milton describes it as intoxication. Essentially, they're drunk on the fruit, but that leads to great unhappiness. And so then you get the first marital fight in history between Adam and Eve after they come to their senses. They're very angry at each other. And so you can see here again that the sort of the disobedience and sin has this immediate reward that then brings its own punishment, and they are not made happy by it.
No couch for Adam to sleep on
nope.
at that point.
No, that's right.
Big question here on Milton and the subjects of fate yeah. and free will. Are Adam and Eve even making a choice
yeah.
when they do what they do?
Yeah, that's a great question. I'm convinced that Milton thinks they do, and that part of what Milton is he doesn't fit easily into any theological camp in the Reformation. So he's a very interesting figure to read. He takes sort of bits from the different traditions and builds his own sort of theological system. But, he definitely wants to assert the importance of will. And showing that they are choosing. So we get God the Father as a character in the poem spends a good bit of time wanting to make sure that Adam and Eve understand the rules so that they're not so that they can't say, oh, well, we didn't know. He wants them to have in a will that's informed by intellect, that sees things in their right relation, and then chooses to sin nevertheless.
At one point, Adam refers to his sin translated into a happy fault.
Yeah.
What good, is Milton saying, can come of the fall of humankind?
Yeah, so that's a great question, and it's very interesting. Milton gives us that line in books 11 and 12. In books 11 and 12, God, the Father, after Adam and Eve have sinned, he sends the archangel Michael to banish Adam and Eve from the garden. And he says, when you do so, give them a vision of what's to come so that they don't despair, so that they can have some hope. And so Michael does. And in this vision of, and so there in books 11 and 12, we get a quick retelling of really all of biblical history. Hmm. And Adam is heartened, of course, when he comes to see Christ's suffering and death for us. And Adam is so moved by this vision that he confused that God would take on flesh and suffer for us. Adam thinks, I almost don't regret my sin now. I'm almost happy. This is all, oh, happy, should I say happy fault that I did this, that it would lead to such a triumph. And it is interesting. The archangel will correct him and advise him that don't be happy about sin, but it is a sign of God's overwhelming goodness that he will redeem it in this such a manner.
Dr. Ben Whalen, Associate Professor of English at Hillsdale College, talking about John Milton and Paradise Lost. Dr. Whalen, thanks for joining us here on the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
Thanks for having me, Scott.
That will wrap up this edition of the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour. Our thanks to Molly Hemingway, Senior Journalism Fellow here at Hillsdale College, Brandon Weikert and his recent book, The Shadow War, Iran's Quest for Supremacy, and Dr. Ben Whalen from Hillsdale's English Department. The Radio Free Hillsdale Hour is recorded at the studios of WRFH, the student-run radio station at Hillsdale College. Remember, you can hear new episodes every week on the station. You also can find extended versions of some of our interviews or listen anytime to the podcast. Find it at podcast.hillsdale.edu or wherever you get your audio. The assistant producer of the program is Sam Lair. Until next week, I'm Scott Bertram, and this has been the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
Welcome to the Queen of Dragons Dispensary, your ultimate destination for top-notch cannabis experiences. Conveniently located at 5044 Shasta Dam Boulevard, Shasta Lake, our locally owned and operated dispensary takes pride in providing you with the best in price, value, and safety. Rest easy knowing that all of our products are rigorously tested for your peace of mind. We champion medical freedom, empowering you to choose what's right for you. Unbelievable value for unbeatable quality. For exclusive deals and exciting updates, don't forget to follow us on Twitter at the Queen Dragons or visit www.queenofdragons.com. The Queen of Dragons Dispensary, where the fire of quality meets the freedom of choice. Backed by popular demand, fresh and local flower powered by Pinnacle, Shasta County's premier local cultivator. Package fresh and daily with a wide variety and best prices and deals in town. And they can package larger sizes and quantities on site. Available only at the Queen of Dragons Dispensary. Winter hours are Monday through Sunday, 9 a.m. to 7 p.m. and they deliver. 530-276-9771.
Hi, I'm Adam Ryan, presiding judge of the Shasta County Superior Court. The Superior Court is now accepting applications from those individuals that are interested in serving on the Shasta County Grand Jury. To apply or get more information, please visit our website at ShastaCountyGrandJury.org.
The Grand Jury is one of the most important and interesting volunteer opportunities you can be part of. Applications are now being accepted. To apply or get more details, visit ShastaCountyGrandJury.org.
Please apply now.
Join Aaron Ryan and Bill Cundiff for We the People Radio every Sunday from noon until 2. Our expert guests will give you the whole story rather than a bunch of sound bites. Our commercial-free archives are always available at wethepeopleradio.us.
Sponsored in part by Pape Machinery, located at 3119 Twinview Boulevard, for all your local John Deere Ag and Turf products. Join us every Sunday from noon until 2, wethepeopleradio.us.
What shall we do about them?
what's going on in Redding, California? This is Tony Horde with Better Homes and Gardens Results Real Estate. Be sure and tune in to KCNR on your radio dial Wednesdays at 5 p.m. for Living in the North State. Together with my three amazing co-hosts, Rich Howe, Bill Woodford, and Mindy Cochran, we'll be interviewing professionals in the industry and taking your calls to answer all your questions and have a great time doing so. Talk to you then, Redding.
What is happening in the state of Jefferson? To find out, listen to the Jefferson State of Mind program Sunday mornings at 9 a.m. on KCNR with your hosts Wayne Carpenter and Terry Raposa. To catch up on past broadcasts or to listen anytime, go to KCNR1460.com and click on the archives link.
Hey, come out and play. Have you seen the bill we all have to pay? The time has come for 51 in a Jefferson state of mind.
The news from Town Hall is brought to you on KCNR Shasta Redding by Shasta Regional Medical Center. Your life, your health, your choice. Shasta Regional Medical Center.